Hello, this is Thompson Smiley with another of those incidents when we take our Smiley's Picks column in the Louisville magazine into the studios of WUOL. And my guest today is Elizabeth Kramer, who's the indefatigable arts reporter for the Courier Journal. I've never seen anybody who can turn out so much fact-filled copy in a week as you do. I mean, you're a leviathan among journalists.
Well, thank you for that. I would say that there's been a lot of facts to try to get straight in the past year about the art scene. There's been so much that has happened. I think there's been a lot of shifts. I mean, not just, you don't see it on stage so much, but, you know, looking at the fact that the Louisville Orchestra has been going through bankruptcy and the negotiations that they've had with their players, which has been very complicated for a lot of people to understand and a lot of times for me to understand and try to decipher for the public, as well as Alan Cowan, who was head of the Fund for the Arts here for so many decades, stepping down, and now that organization looking at how it can operate in a new landscape.
Yes.
You see that. You see now the Speed has just announced that they're going to be closing for 3 years and looking at how they operate. So there's a lot going on in the arts right now, and it's not just a matter of looking at what the performance is down the road or what the announcement is about what's on stage, but how do pieces get into museums? How do they get there for the public to see? What are the resources that it takes? What are the resources that it takes to get a play up on stage at Actors Theater? What does it take to get an opera on stage? I mean, I think that all these are very crucial issues right now to understand how the arts works, and also so that people don't take them for granted. I think that when you don't report on these kind of issues and people don't understand them, it's easy to take them for granted and just think that they'll keep coming. And
yes, I think that's an invaluable function. I never thought I'd say, we miss the critics, but there was a time when the performance took place and the audience gave its view, and then on Monday there was a review in One Time from Bill Mutz, latterly from Adler. And while I usually disagreed with him, especially where the opera company was concerned, it sort of put a sort of imprimatur, a sort of seal of something or other on the performances. And I felt that not having reviews is, you don't get that resonance.
Mm-hmm.
But you're performing a function which I think in some ways is more valuable, and that is the Victorian sense of a music journalist, where you prepare people for the performances and tell them what's interesting and backstage work. I think it's an invaluable task. The reason I asked you on the program, apart from the pleasure of seeing you again and talking, is that you're the only person I've ever met in Louisville who truly seems to have a grasp on the orchestra situation and the way you led us through all these entangled pros and cons of negotiation. I mean, we're talking now, I think, 7 months or 7.5 months since the orchestra last played. It's been, I think, 2 months since I heard a word out of either side. Is this a case of no news is bad news?
I'm not sure exactly what it means. I mean, it's bad news in the sense that they're not negotiating right now. I make follow-up calls all the time with the mediator and the different sides, usually at least once a week. And last time when the musicians voted to reject the proposal, the management for the orchestra came out very clearly and said, this is our last, best, and final offer, and that's it. So I know that the musicians have been wanting to negotiate, but it's been that the management feels that it's made a lot of concessions and changes, and that, I guess, with the financial situation, that it's not possible to do anything else.
You see, I think if an organization is out of commission for a year or so, I think people can get out of the habit of attending it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my fear, that if the Louisville Orchestra does come surging back at whatever size and whatever strength, that older people particularly will have got out the habit of getting in the car and coming downtown a couple of times. Is that a legitimate fear, do you think?
I think that that's a legitimate fear. At the same time, I do think, from looking at other orchestras around the country, and even looking at, and I know this is completely a stretch in terms of a comparison of things that go on in New York City, where you have a lot of musicians. I mean, you've got a massive number of very talented musicians, but you have things that happen in the boroughs and in neighborhoods.
Yes.
You have a lot more of that intimate experience that has people, they don't have to drive all the way downtown sort of thing. They don't have to go to Lincoln Center in New York. And sometimes I think that looking at how other orchestras are trying to program their seasons, looking at not just having things maybe at the Whitney, but I know that certain people that I've talked to who like to go to the opera, they really liked, not this past summer, of course, because they weren't performing, but the summer before when they had concerts on the riverfront in Jeffersonville.
Yes.
And out at Ballard High School, which is, as you know, a wonderful hall.
I mean,
the sound is, and it
best
feels intimate.
In town, I think. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And, you know, and that's closer to where people are. And they were free, of course, so that made a big difference. But I think that finding, going where people are is something that is not only happening in orchestras, but in the arts more. And maybe if things work out or something's, you know, reborn from this this situation, maybe it could be something where there's a little bit more intimacy as well as, you know, the larger pieces. I mean, I know, for instance, in the past year when the National Symphony came here, I mean, that was just amazing. They were all over the state in schools, in chamber orchestras. You know, they did that big concert out at Whitney at the Kentucky Center. I mean, it was really amazing. And I think that that's the kind of model that really grabs people and makes them feel like music or the arts are important and relevant to their lives.
Well, David Roth was a guest on my program a little while ago, and he said that the business model of the opera company has changed dramatically to meet the new economics and the new public taste, making his opera performances, how would you say, a complete evening's experience from the first glass of champagne to the valet parking. And I think it's axiomatic of all human existence that if a thing, an art form doesn't change, it will decay and die. And I think the orchestras of America have been the worst offenders in this sense. I mean, going to a concert is still the same experience that great-grandmama will recall. People sitting up there in black tie looking at Viennese waiters from the 1890s playing great-grandmama's favorite music. And, you know, I think that says nothing to a younger audience.
Well, and sometimes I think, you know, if you talk to people who are artistic directors of orchestras or any type of musical company, you'll see that they talk about, or you'll read about it in different publications, that sometimes it's not going away with the old masters. It's matching them with the new sounds.
Yes.
So that you can hear there is... And that goes into another subject, which is arts education, which is a real important subject that has not been getting the attention it deserves in schools a lot of times because of the current economic crisis that we've been having in this country. But, you know, when people see that they have music of today, even hip-hop and, you know, popular music, there are strains that go back to the classics, and it really helps you deepen your understanding of the music and your experience overall.
My anxiety at the moment is that, current anxiety du jour, is that we talk about polarization in economic terms, the 1% and the 99%, 1% of all the money. And I see a similar thing happening in the arts, where 1% of the population goes to Carmichael's, buys a subscription to the opera, you know, and probably has an Obama bumper sticker and drives a Prius. And the other 99% does none of these things, and it's nowhere on the radar screen. Is that a depressing outlook, or is that a reasonable reflection?
Well, It's probably a reasonable reflection, considering that, you know, a lot of these institutions have been functioning the way they have for 50 years or 100 years. Mm-hmm. And we're in a different time with digital media where people can get things instantaneously. And we have to build on experience. But at the same time, these institutions have to look at how to reach other people than the people that they have been comfy with for a long time. And I think when it comes to, like, for instance, the St. Louis Symphony, I've heard they have hard hat concerts.
Yes.
And things like that. So I think that kind of outreach is important. And it's there. It's just getting people to realize what's out there for them.
Mm-hmm. My guest has been Elizabeth Kramer, who's the arts reporter for the Courier Journal. Thank you, Elizabeth, very much indeed.
Thank you.